It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and now that there's plenty of fresh garden produce around, we're going to start the hour with a conversation about how to preserve some of that freshness so you can enjoy it when the growing season is gone. Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron is here. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And Linda Nave, Extension Program Specialist in the Extension Value Added Agriculture Program, is here. Hi, Linda.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here. And before we get to preserving produce, Richard, I want to ask you a question because we haven't talked since before the incredible rains that almost flooded the state yet again. What kind of calls have you been getting now that we have so much moisture in our gardens?
Actually, it hasn't been that bad, I think, in most cases. We'll probably see a lot more foliar diseases on plants, like blight on tomatoes and things like that. But in general, things have done, for the most part, very well, despite all the rain.
All right. That's good, because we kind of had a perfect growing season going there.
We
as
did.
As perfect as one could be.
And there might be quite a few more mosquitoes out there. But
yes, I have noticed that change.
Yes.
And we seem to have, in the Iowa City area, gnats 3.0 already. And yet another gnat infestation after all of that wetness as well. But that's good to know that it hasn't turned into a lot of problems, at least not yet.
Not yet.
All right. And Linda, I know that you have something special planned for our segment about preserving our produce. What do you have in mind?
Well, Charity, I'm kind of going to reverse roles here. And I'm going to ask you questions. Now, this isn't a test. This is a pretest. So if you get the answer wrong, what we are going to do is discuss why that answer was wrong. So I'm going to ask you questions rather than you ask me questions.
Oh, dear. Pop quiz on the radio. That's
yes.
My favorite thing in the world.
And impromptu, because
right.
I did not give you the questions in advance.
I haven't seen this, and I fully expect to get a lot wrong. Okay. Fire.
Fire. Okay, what we are going to be talking about today is produce that you buy at the farmer's market, get in your CSA bag or box, or harvest from your garden. What do you do with them when you bring them in so that they last longer? Because that's really one of the advantages of growing your own or buying fresh local, is that you get them very fresh. They haven't been sitting on a truck for a long period of time, and they will last longer if you store them properly. So the questions I'm directing at you have to do with not preserving, but rather storing. Where's the best place to put these when you get them home? Okay?
Okay.
That prepares you. So first question, they're all true or false. Tomatoes should not be refrigerated.
See, you've already terrified me. I would say true.
That is very true.
Okay.
Tomatoes, when you get them in from the garden or buy them at the farmer's market, don't put them in the refrigerator. You think that's the best place to keep things in suspended animation. But with tomatoes, that's not true. Tomatoes will not further ripen when they're chilled, and you lose the great texture from a tomato when you put it in the refrigerator. The best storage location is in a cool location in your home, maybe even on your kitchen counter, but not in the sunshine. You don't need to put it on the windowsill or anything like that, but don't put it in the refrigerator. The only time you would is if you cut it open, you slice a couple slices off, and then you put it in a Ziploc bag and put it in the refrigerator.
Okay.
But fresh ones, even grape tomatoes, cherry tomatoes, they should be, if you get them in the vented pint boxes, open the vented pint box up so you get more air movement around them, but just keep them on your countertop.
Interesting. Well, especially if you buy at the store, if you buy those cherry tomatoes, they're often already in kind of a refrigerated section. So it's the cherry tomatoes, I might have stuck in the fridge.
Yep.
But cherry tomatoes in my house, if they're from the garden, they don't last that
no.
long anyway.
You just wash them up and put them in a bowl, and pretty soon they're gone.
Right. Even if they make it to the house.
But. That's right. Here's another one for you. It's soon to be watermelon season. An uncut watermelon can be stored non-refrigerated for 2 weeks. True or false?
I would say true.
That is true, too. You're doing very well, Charity. That's true. Most of us think the minute we get home, we have to clean out a spot in the refrigerator for our watermelon. That's only true if you want to have it and serve it right away as an ice-cold watermelon, which is the best way to eat watermelon. But otherwise, if you don't have space for it and you're not going to be using it right away, cool, dark location, even put it in your basement for a while, so long as you don't forget about it. They can store for quite a while, up to 2 weeks or so, a good fresh watermelon. But once you cut it again, you need to refrigerate it.
Okay. I'm starting to feel confident. I have a feeling that's hubris. All right.
You're doing well. Cucumbers. So you bring a cucumber in from your garden, and you know you wash it off. You put it in the crisper with an apple. With the apples and other things that you have in the crisper. Is that a good idea, true or false?
I have no idea. So I guess false.
That is true. I mean, it's not. You were right.
Okay.
You were right. A cucumber harvested from the garden can be put in the crisper because they do like temperatures about 40, 45. Not really cold, not down to 41, but the trick question here was the apples. Apples give off ethylene, and cucumbers are one of our crops that we have several of, really, that are very ethylene sensitive, that when they're exposed to ethylene, they start the maturation, the ripening process much faster, and they degrade faster. So don't put them in the crisper with your apples.
All right. So they might even degrade faster in the crisper with apples than they would on the counter.
Right. One reason is the crisper is an enclosed environment. So although ethylene in the crisper, the apples in the crisper aren't giving off as much ethylene as they would on the counter, they still are giving off ethylene. And in that closed environment, the concentration gets higher and your cucumbers will start either getting little pits in them, like little sunken areas that look like water-soaked spots. That's due to cold temperatures, and or ethylene can do that as well. So don't do that.
All right.
Okay. The last question. You're doing really well, Charity. The last question is, if you peel something before eating it, you don't need to wash it.
That is false.
Yes. You know, so many times you think, well, that cantaloupe that I'm going to slice, it's got the rind on it. I'm just going to slice through it, cut the rind off, chop it up and put it in a salad. Well, the problem is there is material on the outside of that cantaloupe or watermelon or anything else that you may look clean, but it's not. And there's organisms on that when you slice through it, those organisms will attach themselves to the knife and you're sliding it right through your good produce. So wash everything before you peel it and before you slice it. That's
okay.
Just a good policy to have.
All right.
You did very well.
Well, thank you, Linda. So that helps us a lot with short-term storage. And let's talk a little bit about greens. A lot of people, of course, grow greens in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
Kale has gotten to be extraordinarily popular, chard, that kind of thing. When you bring that inside, what is the best way to store that?
Well, what I would do with that is you bring it in and bring it in as soon as you can. Don't leave it in the bucket to wilt. That's the key thing, because once it really wilts, it's not going to revive much. What I would suggest doing is washing it right away and spinning it in a salad spinner, the greens, because what that does is it cleans it and it adds a little bit of moisture to it, crisps it up, and then put it in a sealed bag. That works very well. Now, some greens can be chilled pretty low, such as your leafy lettuce. Your kale can be a little bit cooler as well. But your romaine lettuce is very chill sensitive. Even if you wash it, put it in a bag, but you set it in your refrigerator, maybe next to the wall of your refrigerator, it actually touches that, or it gets kind of put in the back where it could get just a little bit cold, that will have chilling injury right away. Those areas that touch the side walls of your cooler, your refrigerator those leaves will be mushy, dark, water soaked from cold temperature injury.
And in the plastic bag section of the store, you do see some bags that are breathable plastic bags that are specifically designed for vegetables. What do you think about those?
They work fine for a longer storage, but just a plain Ziploc bag, if you're not going to have them stored for very long, works fine too.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about storing things for a longer period of time. You know, a lot of us like to freeze our produce. And let's talk about freezing first. That's I like it because it's the simplest way to go about it. But what are some of the safety things we should be concerned about if we're freezing produce?
I am not a food specialist when it comes to freezing and canning and preserving. I'm going to refer people to some Extension publications on our website, online store through Extension. But some of the safety things with anything you're going to preserve is preserve good quality. It doesn't mean that you can't can or freeze products that have had some nicks and things in, because you can do that because you can cut those areas off. But those that are showing signs of degradation, it's kind of quality in, quality out. So from a horticultural perspective, if you're going to go to the trouble of preserving something, make sure you're preserving good quality product.
Well, I think some people have that urge, if things are starting to go bad, to then preserve so they can kind of rescue something.
That's right. And the recipes are very scientifically formulated by the food people. And the food people, I mean, is the nutrition specialists and the food safety specialists. They have prepared these recipes for product that is at their prime. Once a tomato or a food item starts losing and starts deteriorating, the chemistry in that product changes as well. The acidity levels, the sugar levels change, and so the recipe may not be appropriate for that particular product. So I would definitely use good quality. That doesn't mean you can't freeze a carrot that has a nick out of the top. You just cut that part off. If everything else looks very, very good, fine. But it's just when they start loosening their ripeness.
All right. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes to answer your questions about your yard, your garden, your landscape. You can join the conversation by giving us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or you can post on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio. With me today, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Linda Nave, Extension Program Specialist in the Extension Value Added Agriculture Program. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today on Talk of Iowa. And with me to answer your questions are Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Linda Nave, Extension Program Specialist in the Value Added Agriculture Program. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or you can post on our Facebook page, and the phones do fill up fast. So if you want to get in, make that call right now, 866-780-9100. Here's an email from Tracy in Davenport. We'll be establishing a new lawn in the spring as we're building a new house this fall and winter. I have a two-part question. We have two small dogs who have killed some recent sod patches with their urine, but surrounding grass seems to be unaffected by the urine. What turf method do you think would be more resilient to dogs, sod or using hydroseed?
It doesn't really matter. Basically, the urine is going to damage or destroy the turf, the areas that are directly sprayed. So I would try, if I could, to maybe set aside an area where the dogs can go, and I'm not worried or concerned about it.
All right. And the second question is, the topsoil won't be replaced on the site unless we pay for it, which we would like to avoid. In this regard, which turf method would be better?
Boy, you need good soil regardless. You'd like to have at least 6 to 8 inches of good, well-drained, fertile soil. If you don't have that, it may be a struggle long-term as far as trying to get grass established.
That should be in the builder's contract.
I would think so, too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Is that a political statement, Linda, or is it actually?
It should be, because that's part of the whole process, and the homeowner should insist on it, because they will struggle for years getting anything to grow.
Right. And if they ever want to have a garden, if they do much landscaping, anything like that.
A garden, trees, shrubs, lawn, anything.
All right. And plus, they sell the topsoil, right?
They sometimes do, I'm afraid.
All right. So there's something in it for them if you don't get it back. But all right. You can struggle a long time if you don't. Let's do another email and we'll get to the phones. This is from Lori. What am I supposed to do with my daisies and lilies once they're done blooming? Also, will the lilies, tiger, and Asiatic bloom again?
Typically, they will not. So what I would do after they're done blooming is simply deadhead them. And do not cut them back until a killing frost or freeze in the fall.
That's basically it. All right. And Lori says, thank you for guiding a novice gardener. So deadheading is just simply...
removing spent flowers. Right.
Okay.
So they don't form a seed pod.
All right. Perfect. I just didn't know how novice. All right. Let's go to the phones. Bouchard is on the line in Davenport. Hi, Bouchard. Hi. Are you there? Bouchard in Davenport. Nope. All right. We will move on to Jeremy in Dyersville. Hi, Jeremy.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Yeah, I have a row of arborvitae in my backyard as a windbreak. We live up in a farming community, so there aren't much windbreaks going along. But last winter, a big chunk, probably about a third, maybe, of the major branches of one of my arborvitaes just went brown.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed that around the area, a lot of the arborvitaes that people had for windbreaks have been taking damage, and a mm-hmm. lot of them have just been cutting them down.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping there was a way to salvage it, or if not, what's a good replacement? Because I want to get it in the ground before I lose my windbreak.
Well, over the last, I would say, 3, 4, or 5 years, the arborvitae have not done well, and we have relied on them for many, many years. And I would say the weather is the main culprit. We had the very wet years in 2009, 2010. We had two very dry summers the past 2 summers. We had the coldest winter in 35 years this past winter. And so they have just not done well with those weather conditions. So we're seeing quite a bit of dieback. All you can do is basically remove the dead areas. If they're totally brown, they are dead. They're not going to green back up. Now, as far as replacements, if you have the space, and that's the key thing here, the arborvitae tend to be fairly narrow.
Right.
And so if you don't have a lot of space, they're quite useful in that regard. If you had the space, I would go with something like a Norway spruce, which is a big tree, a nice windbreak tree, though. Very reliable. You can grow it in most of Iowa, and it has very few pest problems. Very reliable. So if you had the space, I'd go with Norway spruce or possibly white pine.
Okay, and what's a good time of year to get one of those in the ground?
I would prefer to plant those in the spring.
And
I say that because I want them to have a full growing season to get established in the landscape. My concern is if I plant those, let's say, for example, in September, and then we have a early winter, they just don't have much time to get established. And because of that, they're more prone to winter injury that very first year. So I would prefer spring.
Okay. Sounds great. Thank you.
All right, Jeremy, thanks a lot for your call. We'll give Bouchard and Davenport another try. Hi, Bouchard.
Yes. Hi.
All right. We can hear you this time. What's your question?
Well, I was wondering if we can freeze tomatoes and cucumbers.
All right. Linda?
Tomatoes freeze very well. You can freeze tomatoes, chop them up, put them in a bag, freeze them. They freeze very well without the need for additional salt or anything. Cucumbers, not so much. Cucumbers are very sensitive to chilling. If you freeze them, they'll turn to mush. So the best thing to do with cucumbers is the old-fashioned way of canning them. That's why we have pickles and canned things like that. But I wouldn't attempt to freeze a cucumber.
All right, Bouchard, thank you for your call. And on a very similar subject, Helen's on the line in Ames. Hi, Helen.
Hi. I was just wondering, too, about cucumbers and spinach and lettuce. Can you freeze that?
We covered the cucumbers. What about spinach and lettuce?
Lettuce, no. Spinach, yes. You can freeze spinach pretty easily. The process I am not sure of because, again, I've never done it and I'm not a specialist in that area, but you can freeze spinach.
And it's not hard to find if you have access to a computer.
Right. And I, like I say, Iowa State has some excellent publications on canning and freezing and canning and freezing with food safety in mind. So they're excellent. We also, I didn't mention earlier, have a great publication called Harvesting and Storing Vegetables. That is storing them fresh and harvesting them at their peak. And that is available free of charge just to download or print off. It's PM 731 and it's found on the extension.iastate.edu website.
All right. Helen, thank you so much for your call. So if I'd failed that quiz, that's the publication that I need, right, Linda?
That's right. But you did well.
All right. And I will continue as I have been. You can give us a call with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And next up, Mark is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good. What's your question?
Well, similar to the arborvitae, I've got some concolor firs that have been under a lot of stress for like the last three seasons, and they're becoming very thin. They aren't dead yet, but because they're so thin, there's a lot of weeds and other growth that's springing up underneath them. It's, you can't get to it to physically pull the weeds because of the branches are still too thick. You can't mow under it, and I wondered if I could spray like a herbicide under there, if you have any suggestions, because it really looks pretty tacky.
Well, it's difficult. I guess as far as using a herbicide, you may need some assistance where maybe someone maybe holds the branches up while you spray maybe, and you could use Roundup. In that case, but I would want to have someone or something basically hold the branches up where they're out of the way, and then I would spray with Roundup, and that should be okay if you want to do that.
We considered doing that, but I was concerned that how long would you need to hold the branches up, because some of these, the weeds down there, are, you know, some of them are 10, 12 inches and would come in contact with the leaves after the branches after they came back down.
Yeah, I'm not too concerned about that. I just don't want to spray the branches directly.
Okay.
The actual bark is dead tissue, and it shouldn't really absorb the material. I just want to make sure I don't actually spray the branches directly. So I would think as soon as you're done spraying, that if you let the branches down gently, there probably should be no problem.
Okay, great. And then a quick follow-up on that. I was reading online a few days ago that sometimes salt from the snow plowing in the streets can cause needle browning. Some of these trees, the trunks are probably within 12 feet, 14 feet of the curb. Would the salt spray or road chemicals on the needles have any effect? The street side needles don't show any more browning than the opposite side of the trees. Can those chemicals travel through the root system and affect the browning of the needles?
Well, there's two things that could occur if you're near a very busy road where you have many cars going by very quickly.
Oh, they could spray it.
They could spray it. But if it's a typical residential street, probably shouldn't be a problem as far as the spray. As far as the soil, typically that's going to be found within a few feet of the curb. It shouldn't really leach that much, I wouldn't think. So 12 feet away actually sounds pretty good as far as the plants are concerned.
Well, that's the trunk. Some of the branches are closer. But again, the street side branches don't show any more browning than the opposite side of the tree. So,
okay.
Well, thanks for the information.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. And we just we've seen so many brown trees this year, and now we're way past Jeff Iles' deadline.
Yes, we are.
And even past yours.
We're past the drop dead sign. Yes.
All right.
That they're dead or they're alive.
They're dead if they're not leafed out. Yes.
Right. So if you've been waiting, yeah. chances are pretty good.
It was a very, very difficult winter. So,
yes, we all remember. You can give us a call and join the conversation with your questions at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. If you have questions for Richard Giron and Linda Nave, please join us. Patty's on the line next in Des Moines. Hi, Patty.
Hi, what kind of vegetables can I plant this late in the season? And what do I do about my asparagus? It got totaled this winter. Do I plant asparagus tops next spring, or what do I, how do I restart asparagus?
Okay, your phone's breaking up a little bit, but I got the question. She's wondering what vegetables can she still plant this late in the season?
Well, there are some things that they can still plant. And what we need to do is consider when our first freeze is in the fall. Our full first fall freeze is typically, depending on where you live in the state, let's say around early October. It can be a little earlier in the north and a little later in the southern part of the state. So we count back from there, and if we have 40 days later in the summer, as soon as the temperatures start cooling off a little bit, and right now actually is a good window you can plant lettuce right now. I see the temperatures are going to be the nighttime temperatures in the 50s and 60s, daytime temperatures not too high. So you could plant lettuce, because the real critical factor with that is germination in warm soil. So if the temperature is a little bit cooler, we have a weak window, you can go ahead and plant some of those cooler season things like lettuce and spinach like that. So you can go ahead and plant that now when it cools off. But if it warms up again, I would wait to get till fall. But counting back days, you could plant some broccoli. You could either direct seed it. You could start your little transplants, then plant them out for a fall crop. Things like kale can be planted now. So there's still a lot, but I wouldn't plant tomatoes. I wouldn't plant peppers. It's getting a little bit late for that. You could still plant cucumbers and zucchini and get a real late crop. It may not be completely done producing by the time a fall frost hits, but you'll still get a good crop.
And green beans.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I've seen a number of reports calling this little break in the heat that we have coming next week, the summer polar vortex. We've come to really enjoy hyperbole in this summer in this country, but we should enjoy a break from the heat next week. Next up,
Had an asparagus question.
Right. That's right. So her asparagus was totaled over the winter. She's wondering if she needs to start over.
Yeah, if the plants basically were very poor, very weak, then I would probably start a new bed. And I would find a different location, wouldn't put them back in the same area. As far as a site, basically a well-drained soil is a must. It should be relatively weed-free, and it should get at least 6 hours of direct sun each day.
All right. Sounds good. And I think we've got time for at least one more question before we get to the break. So let's get to Brad in Des Moines. Hi, Brad.
Howdy. I have a question. I've got a few. I've got three dwarf fruit trees that I have in pots indoors. I've had them growing for about 3 years now. And it's a lemon, a lime, and a pomegranate. The lemon has been flowering like crazy this year and has been bearing fruit. The pomegranate has had a lot of flowers. I haven't seen any fruit. And the lime, I have never seen a bud or a flower on it. I was wondering if there's anything I might be able, like, if it's just not ready yet, or what the deal might be, if you have any advice for me.
Is the lime kind of small in size?
No, they're all approximately the same size.
Okay. I was thinking maybe maturity was an issue. You might want to maybe next year, maybe bring it outside in late May.
Okay.
And see if the weather conditions outside might improve plant vigor and maybe encourage flowering and bearing fruit. Mm-hmm. So I would be inclined to bring it outside maybe around late May. When you do so, bring it outside, put it in complete shade for the first several days, and then gradually expose it to more periods of sunlight. And then after maybe 10 days or so, it should be able to take full sun. Leave it outside all summer long. Make sure you water it when it's dry. Maybe fertilize once or twice a month during the summer, and then bring it inside around maybe mid to late September before that frost or freeze. and see if maybe that might coax it to go ahead and flower.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for your call. And we're nearly to the break, but I'm wondering, with these sort of unseasonably cool temperatures, I know that when it's really, really super hot, we have problems with pollination if your tomatoes are in bloom, that kind of thing. Are the cooler temperatures good?
Well, there's kind of a drawback there in that on some of your plants, like your vine crops, you need pollen transferred from the male flower to the female flower. And the honeybees and the other pollinators do that. The honeybees and the other bees are not as active on cloudy, wet weather, so you may see less fruit just because of less pollination.
All right. We're not in that perfect zone.
Nope.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back to answer more of your questions at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Iowa State University Extension horticulturists Richard Duran and Linda Nave. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Linda Nave and Richard Duran. They are here to answer your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Eileen is on the line next from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Eileen.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I've got a tree that I think may be a victim of the poor weather we've been having, too. It's an autumn blaze maple, about 13 years old. And this summer, it had more seeds on it. The whole tree was covered. We've never seen that before. Now the leaves are very sparse, and it almost looks like they're turning fall colors. And a little bit of bark stripping away. I wondered if we'd lost the tree.
Well, I have seen a number of those that have not done well, and I'm assuming it has been the weather, the dry summers and this very cold winter. And when trees are in trouble, they kind of sense it, and so they tend to produce a heavy seed crop. So there's probably a tie there. So I guess I wouldn't give up on it, though, at this point.
Okay.
As long as it has some foliage, I would have some hope. You really can't do much to help. Now, obviously, the tree has ample moisture. No problem at all. But you never know about Iowa as far as the weather. So if the weather turns very dry in August and September, go ahead and water that tree so it doesn't have to deal with any water stress.
Okay.
And then see what it does next spring. That's the key. What does it do next spring? If it leaves out better, terrific, a very hopeful sign. But if it doesn't, if it has fewer leaves, you have dieback in the canopy, that is a sign to me that it's in a irreversible decline, that it's not going to recover. So at that point, I would probably cut it down if that's the case. So hopefully it does recover, but it may not. I have seen some trees in central Iowa that did not survive. They were cut down this year. So that's unfortunate.
Thank you for your help.
All right, Eileen, thanks a lot for your call. Don is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Don.
Good morning.
What's your question?
Well, the question has to do with a replacement tree. I lost a large mature maple, and so now I need to replace the tree. And part of the question is timing, and part of the question is the selection of the tree. There is another tree. The tree adjacent to it is a current mature locust that's about 35 years old. And the tree that went down was 30-some years old, 55 feet. So when should I do it? And then I know that Richard has a number of times talked about the Kentucky coffee tree. So that'd be an option. Also, what about the espresso Kentucky tree and without the pods? And what about another locust next to the existing locust?
I think I would go with something different, have some diversity. So I would probably pick something different. It could be another maple, possibly. It could be an oak. It could be a linden, it could be a Kentucky coffee tree, but something different, add some diversity. And as far as a male, yes, I would prefer, if I'm going with a Kentucky coffee tree, I would prefer a male because the females do produce those fairly large pods, which can be pretty annoying. So I would go with something as far as a male Kentucky coffee tree.
Okay, and what about the distance from the existing mature maple? And then also there's a slight hill. The tree that went down was on just on the edge of a slight hill, or kind of a nice hill. Should I avoid the hill, and how much distance would you say?
The hill shouldn't be a problem per se. I just want to make sure that each tree has enough space to grow.
Yeah.
And when you're spacing trees in the yard, when you're planting them, they're small and you don't realize how big they're going to get. So typically when you're spacing big shade trees, they probably should be at least 35, 40 feet apart at least.
Yeah, I may have a little trouble with 40. 30 is easy, and then 35 maybe. 40 I don't think I can make.
Okay, well, 35 is probably okay then.
Okay. All right. And then the only other issue is the locust tree was one that was damaged by umbrellas. Looks like it's coming out of it.
Okay.
But, so it may not grow as big as normal. So thank you.
All right, Don. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Tim on the line. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I was wondering, we have a wisteria vine that's going up a locust tree. It's been there about 15 years, but it has never bloomed. I was wondering what the deal was.
Well, do you know what kind of wisteria it is?
No, I don't.
Okay. There are different types. The Japanese type, which is very common in the eastern United States, where you have these long hanging purple or blue flowers that hang down from the vine, they don't really do very well here in Iowa. So the ones that do best in Iowa are the Native American or Kentucky wisterias. They have flowers. They're not as big or as huge. They're typically a light blue, but they do perform quite reliably here in Iowa. So you might want to consider maybe an American or a Kentucky wisteria instead of maybe the Japanese.
Okay.
All right, Tim. Thanks for your call. Next, we've got Garrett in Muscatine. Hi, Garrett.
Hi, yeah. This is Garrett.
Yeah, what's your question?
My question is, you mentioned earlier about use of herbicide and Roundup. I'm kind of curious as to your opinions with all the recent publications on colony collapse syndrome with bees, as well as I read earlier today about the effects on birds.
Well, I think as far as the colony collapse on bees, that's a different pesticide, specifically an insecticide, not the Roundup. Yes, people can or sometimes do use Roundup too much. They rely on it too much, but in some cases it can be a useful tool.
All right. And it's something, if you're going to use it responsibly in the
Absolutely,
environment and take
right.
that into account. And for a lot of people I know, it is a tool of last resort as well.
Right. In some cases, you just don't have a very good alternative. And the Roundup in that case, for example, if you have a tree that you want to kill, you can't dig it up, you simply cut it off and put it on the Roundup.
Does
a good job.
Carol's on the line next. Hi, Carol.
Good morning.
What's your question?
I experimented with calla lilies and got them at really a reasonable price, so I put them in the ground, and then I later dug one up and put it in a pot. I'm wondering what I need to do for them for this fall, dig them up, or what can I do for them?
Yeah, the callas are basically a tender perennial. You can try to dig them up and put them in a pot, bring them inside. If you do that, put them in a east window where they get some direct sun. You might want to use a humidifier so you have higher humidity. That would be one option. The other option would be to basically let them die back in the fall and then bring them inside and overwinter them possibly inside.
Do you cut them back dramatically?
If you let them die back, then you cut off that dead debris once they've been killed by a frost or freeze. Yes.
Okay.
And you dig the corms that underneath
right.
the little tubers. It's not a tubers. It's a corm underneath the soil, and you store that over winter in a cool, dry location.
Oh, and then start them over again next year.
Right.
And it isn't a real. It isn't like cannas. It isn't a real simple process. And it isn't as reliable, I don't believe, from my experience.
Okay, well, this was an experiment this year, so we'll see how it works.
Go for it. Go for it. Enjoy it and see, you know, it's an experiment. If you're successful, good for you.
It bloomed one time. Is there a way to get it to bloom again?
Well, you just try to provide the best environment possible. Outdoors, I would say, an eastern exposure where it gets morning sun, afternoon shade. It doesn't like the extreme heat, and it doesn't really want that hot afternoon sun. So I'd say eastern location, keep it well watered when it's dry, and it should respond if the temperatures are, let's say, moderate, not extreme heat, but let's say in the 80s. That's what they like.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
All right, Carol, thanks a lot for your call. And let's get to a couple of email questions here. This is from Jeff in Des Moines. Is this the time of year to fertilize a strawberry patch?
Not a June-bearing strawberry patch, no. If it's a ever-bearing or day-neutral variety, I would say early August.
Okay. This is from Jan in Mason City. I have a young northern catalpa tree that's been in the ground for maybe 5 years. In this tree, there are two branches on different sides of the tree that have a problem. The leaves have turned brown and fallen off. Can you comment on what this might be? Is it on the south side of the house? Or it is on the south side of the house and is not near the street.
I am not sure on that. I would be concerned if the leaves are drying up. That would seem to indicate the branch may be dying, but I'm not sure of the cause.
All right. And this is from Stephen. I planted a swamp oak and a sugar maple 2 years ago. Each were about 3 feet tall at the time. This year, some of the branches on both have bent down about halfway. The ends have died, but the rest of the branch looks okay. What might be causing that?
Well, there may be some, if you're seeing some branch die back as far as the outer portion of the branch, again, that might be weather-related. And so at this time of year, if that outer portion of the branch doesn't have any foliage at all, I would prune it back to where you do have foliage.
All right. Greg is on the line next from, oh, he's on the road. Hi, Greg. Oops. That's my fault. Hi, Greg.
Hi. I just have a question about what the secret is to growing black raspberries. We've been battling for years trying to get them to grow. And this year we thought, well, we do raised gardening, so we thought we'd make a separate box, you know, prepare the soil and everything. We put lime in and thought we had a really good thing going, and we bought some really nice plants, and now we have sticks. So,
okay, no growth at all, no foliage at all.
No, it just slowly but surely, it just on every plant, it just withered away. So,
well, what I would do is I would look for a different site. An alternate site, not the current site, but an alternate site. Make sure it has a well-drained soil, full sun, at least 6 hours of direct sun. And I would buy some new plants next spring and try to find a really hardy variety like Black Hawk, which is from Iowa State University. It's a fairly hardy variety. And plant that next spring. Sometimes with the black raspberries, especially in northern Iowa, if we have a cold winter, they can winter kill. So I would look for something like Black Hawk, which is a very hardy variety.
Okay. We just put these in this spring. I mean, and we like I said, we prepared a raised box type thing. And we, at first we thought maybe there was the leaves were being eaten off by deer or something. So we netted them, and they still died. So
did they come up? They came up and sent up a shoot?
Did they leaf out?
They were leafed out when we planted them.
Oh, they were. Oh. Were these bare root or in containers?
They were bare roots.
Okay. Well, that's not really the best quality. What you'd like to have is something that is completely dormant without foliage. And maybe they just could not establish themselves quickly enough because they already had foliage. So I would try to find some nice bare root plants, no foliage at all, early next spring, or order them through the mail. And
right.
Then as soon as you get them in the ground before they leaf out, and that gives them a chance to establish their roots before they do leaf out.
Okay. Is there a chance that these are still good?
I don't think so, no. I think they just could not establish quickly enough because they had the foliage and their root system couldn't get enough moisture.
A good way to tell is dig one up and take a look, see if there's any signs of life under the ground, but I doubt it too.
Yeah, okay, because they had quite a bit of foliage. We thought, well, that's a great looking plant, and we planted them, and then it was gone. So,
oh, bummer.
But, yeah, All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. Better luck next year, Greg. Thanks a lot for your call. Next up, let's go to Matt in Muscatine. Hi, Matt.
Good morning. Had a quick question. I had planted just under 40 emerald green arborvitaes, and I had already caged them, and because we do have some deer in the residential area, but somebody had told me that you could sprinkle blood meal around the base of the conifers to hopefully propel or get, you know, so the deer won't chew on them. Is that fact or fiction, do you know?
It's kind of both. In that people try, there are a number of repellents. There are commercial products. You can use various things. And sometimes they do help, but oftentimes they don't. They're not very reliable. So typically, if you're dealing with deer, it typically has to be, as far as something that really does work, it has to be fencing, because repellents typically are not reliable. They're not.
One thing is, you know, with blood meal, you sprinkle that around, you get a heavy rain, it's gone, and then you have to continually do that.
Kind of a waste of money then, probably, in the long run.
Right, and deer are very urbanized anymore. They get very familiar with scents and
sounds,
and so it doesn't bother them. And if
as
you put it out there, they'll say, "Heh, that's no harm, I'll come back."
Okay. Well, my neighbors, they have actual pyramidal arborvitaes, and everything is chewed 6 foot up.
Yes, I've seen that too. Yes,
planting. She says you need to cage them, but it's like, how long do you cage them? And because they keep growing, and of course the weeds grow up under them, and you got to clean that out and things like that. So.
Linda, did I just hear you whisper forever?
Oh dear. Yes, forever. I'm sorry to say.
All right, Matt, thanks
Thank
a lot
you
for
much.
Your call. Yep, last question of the day. Ishan is on the line in Cedar Falls. Hi, Ishan. Oh, sounds like Ishan is busy doing something else. Last question of the day goes to John in Marion County. Hi, John.
Hello. We live in a heavy timbered area and have a lot of white ash that have been dropping complete leaves. And on the bottom side of the petiole, there's between 5 and 10 holes, looks like insect ovipositor. And is that the female cicadas laying their eggs in those petioles, and then the leaf stem fails, or what's causing that?
I'm not sure.
I cut one open, and there was looked like dozens of little white eggs in there, about a millimeter thick and eighth of an inch long.
Okay. I'm not sure on that. What you might want to do is take some digital photographs and send those to our entomologist. And his email address is insects, plural, INSECTS, at iastate.edu.
All right, John, thanks a lot for your call. Richard, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Linda Nave, thank you.
You're welcome, Charity.
Linda Nave, Extension Program Specialist in the Value Added Agriculture Program. We'll be back with Horticulture Day again next Friday. And on Monday on Talk of Iowa and River to River, we continue our summer series on the environment in Iowa, ripple effects. On Monday, we'll talk about rural and urban land use. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.